finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football and the hurling show. It's just the GAA Hour. It's all together here, Conor.
You didn't tell me it was a hurling show before.
Well, we're just doing a GAA Hour. We're not doing anything in particular because there should have been both shows today, but obviously it's all been called off. We've all had a few nice days at home, pretending to work from home. I shouldn't probably be saying that on the podcast. But yeah, so the GAA made the decision last Friday to call off all the games. Like, we criticised them before with the flooding, leaving until the last minute. They actually took no chances whatsoever this time and called them off on a Friday. It was absolutely the right call. No way they could go ahead. I was reading the Croke Park one could have gone ahead with Dublin or Kerry because it has underground heating, but obviously supporters, you know, safety and ability to get to the games, especially the Kerry fans. Well, they don't come up to Croke Park anyway, do they?
They wouldn't have travelled.
So, will we give the GAA a bit of credit for being in there earlier? Do you have anything to give out about?
Could have been earlier. Like, I was watching the League of Ireland getting cancelled and the rugby fixtures got cancelled.
They were cancelled the day before.
Yeah. Right? And like, I know they were, like, their games were a day before the GAA as well, but it's just, I was like, what are you waiting on? There's no, like, there's nothing to surprise you here. The whole country's covered in snow. Like, just make the call. But obviously it was a difficult decision because where the hell did he put the fixtures is probably what they were thinking.
Well, that's the problem. I'd say, like, I mean, they've really shot themselves in the foot here with this brave and bold restructure as Aegon O'Farrell. We'll get on to talking about him in a little while. He said this was Pádraig Duffy's, and like, the CPA accused the GAA of not having a master fixtures plan, not having any vision, kind of putting out fires as they happen and making it up on a year-on-year basis, not having any long-term plan for fixtures. And they're right. Like, I mean, this was changed, so it was shoehorned in. So in January, the winners of the Auburn Cup and the early season competitions have to play four games in January. And we're playing on a Sunday and a Wednesday and a Sunday, right? So that's an intense schedule in January. Then you get into February and March, still shitty enough weather, and you have to play seven league games and maybe a final. Like, I mean, to shoehorn every, like, 80%, 90% of the games into January, February, March is beyond belief, and only leave maybe three spare weekends the whole time. The Auburn Cup still isn't played. The McKenna Cup was played last weekend, was it? It was played.
Yeah.
I don't think the Auburn Cup. I see John Heslin tweeting me, GAA, saying, meet you at the border tomorrow in Kinnegad for the Auburn Cup final. We'll have a snowball fight, last man stands. Like, I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke. The fixtures are an absolute joke, and there's no point in saying anything else. And for Aegon O'Farrell, one of the most unimpressive presidents to ever preside over the GAA, call it brave and bold. It's stupid. A blind man could tell you this is not going to work. It's just completely all over the place.
And you're in a position now where it's just the start of March. We've only played 2 months of the year, or like, we've experienced 2 months of the year, and a lot of counties only have five games left for the whole season.
Well, they just moved to the end of March and they've two games left.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's all your games are now. And I see some, like, people, and they're trying to analyse Galway, and they're trying to analyse, and they're saying Galway will be contenders. Like, I mean, we can't judge, because a lot of the teams aren't playing their first teams. A lot of teams are training hard. They've got their focus on the championship. So we're playing all this in a mess. And here's, this will tell you how bad of a mess it's going to get, is that Laois are due to play London next weekend, right? So this is on, which was supposed to be a free weekend. So whatever reason, with London, it was decided to be played on that weekend. Anyways, because all the other games now are postponed this weekend, there's a full round next weekend. So Laois are going to have to play Antrim. The following 2 weeks after next weekend, there's full rounds.
Yeah.
And then there's the final after that. So Antrim are going to have to come down midweek and play Laois in probably what will be a top of the table clash. So, like, I mean, whatever, what's the round trip from travelling from Antrim to Laois? Like,
you go through Dublin there?
They've no other way. The only way around this is to play the Division 4 final on the first like a week into April, which is obviously, you know, impeding on the free month for clubs, which anyways is not going to be a free month for clubs because it's just not. So the whole thing is an absolute mess. If I was Antrim, I would be absolutely livid because, like, I mean, this is not just a dead rubber Division 4 game. This is a match which could decide who goes up or who goes into the final or not. So, like, I mean, for them to have to, there's no other place to put this other than a midweek game, unless they're going to put the final back. And that's just completely wrong.
And the whole schedule was dependent on no cock-ups from nature. Like, they didn't have any room for error.
At this time of the year.
But what happened was they had bad weather in December, and that affected Corrifin and Corrifin's game in London.
That was the start of it.
Their game with Murfield was affected, and then that meant that the Sigerson Cup was affected. Then there was bad weather in January. That means the O'Byrne Cup still hasn't been played. Has the FBD Cup been played?
That was, yeah.
That was bad weather in January. It affected that. Now there's bad weather at the end of February, and like it is going to go into April. And the thing is, like, why not? Like, nobody, no clubs need this April month. Like, just stop holding on to it. That's just lip service to club teams to say, there, you got your little month. Even though we're taking up the first weekend with all the fixtures, like all the league finals, hurling and football finals. Just go on to it because no one wants it. Give people August free or whatever.
That's what I mean. Like, I mean, what good is April? The problem is some of the counties might play a championship game or two and then they have to take the break for the 3 months. So, like, I mean, to club players to not kind of have that momentum just to play a one-off game and then have to wait. Clubs don't want that. Yeah. They want it to start and they want to be able to play for the next few, you know what I mean, until the end rather than this kind of thing going on. So, like, I mean, if ever there was a light shone on this nonsense, which is these fixtures and which is these kind of, you know, like, most people can see that it wasn't going to work. And, like, I mean, of all years. And, like, then you have, I think it was McGill saying at the weekend that he was kind of happy with these weather conditions because it's really tested out the new structure. It hasn't tested it out. It's actually embarrassed it. It's made it look absolutely not fit for purpose.
It has tested it. It just failed badly.
Yeah, to play first 3 months of the year in horrible conditions, to play 90% of your games, and then during the summer to play to be guaranteed two. Like, there's no logic to that. Like, I mean, there's no logic to that. So, like, I mean, it makes no sense. But, like, that's just kind of what you're dealing with. Talking about Aegon O'Farrell. I was writing last week on Tuesday, I would have mentioned it on Thursday, about his presidency and how forgettable it was. And, like, I mean, it's just when I was doing a little bit of research before I wrote it, like, I mean, for him to say this before he took up the presidency, that I would establish a small work group to devise a template and bring clarity to our fixture schedule. We need our full games programme clearly set out for all competitions. So now what we say here, Sigerson, Fitzgibbon get their little slot, club gets their slot, Intercounty gets a slot, and then the club obviously finishes in a calendar year and start that process all over again. Yeah. Sigerson first, then Intercounty, then club, and then, you know, finish that out to the, out to the end. So, like, I mean, this fella says this and it's all just rhetoric. Like, I mean, do they even mean it? And, like, he's presided over 3 years then and, like, calling Pádraig Duffy's proposal or Super 8s brave and bold, like, when we see what the issues of that are now. And then you have other things where he doesn't know the GPA salaries despite funding them. Like, I mean, I thought that was absolutely beyond belief. Like, saying the club is the most important part of the association, then denying the CPA the opportunity to speak at Congress. That is another kind of foot in the mouth kind of thing. Like, I mean, how can you say the club is the most important part of the association, and then the CPA write to you and request, can they address Congress, to let Congress know, because the CPA were pretty new, what they're about, what their, you know, their mandate is, what they want to achieve, and the GA president of GA saying no. Like, I mean, that makes absolutely no sense. And some of the stuff on Sky, like, I thought this was absolutely outrageous. So, like, I mean, we all understand the situation with Sky, and there was a lot of different motions proposed to Congress to keep all games free to air, pretty much, was it? It was a Dublin club got it into Congress, Kerry supported it. There was a few more to go to Congress this year, but they were too similar to the one that failed last year. This one ultimately failed anyways, and it was that all games should be free to air. So the way the Pádraic Duffy argued this, and he was supported by Éagán Fáil, was, and this makes sense, that they wanted Sky to be in the bidding process so that RT and TV3 would be kept honest, and the highest price they might be able to achieve that in negotiations, and they would have more to bargain with. That makes perfect business sense. There's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, Pádraic Duffy says any restriction that prohibits the GAA from engaging with all interested parties, including subscription TV providers, would seriously reduce our negotiating power. Perfect. That makes perfect sense. Everybody would agree with that. And that's what Congress voted on. They voted that Sky should be kept in the negotiating process. Then they give Sky 5 more years. Sky went into negotiating process with TV3, with RT, with the free-to-air channels, and they chose Sky over TV3. So this wasn't a case of Sky being allowed into the negotiating process. This was Sky getting an extra 5-year deal. But O'Farrell, of course, says at the end of this, there was 30 votes at Congress against the media rights deal. The debate is over. So just shutting down an awful lot of GAA members who are really up in arms about this and feel really strongly, and a lot of counties that are bringing motions to Congress. The debate is over, he says. And that was voted on to keep Sky in the process. This was not framed that Sky should be getting, you know, that people wanted it to go to Sky. People voted, or Congress voted, for Sky to remain in the mix.
Yeah, it's... Although you listen out all that stuff, like, he's probably going to think of himself, and he probably, in his industry, will be thought of as a success, because all the money that's coming in off the back of these things, like, you know, Sky as well is a tough one, like, because, yeah, I get the arguments in that, and... And we had Paul Royce on before, and like, it was a really good debate reviewing him. And what I would say, and it's probably why it's hard to argue with a GAA delegate, is like, look, this guy paid over $4 billion for 3 years of Premier League coverage. Like, that's, you know, that's the sort of power that they're coming into, and that's why they're probably so keen to lap up 5-year deals off him as well. They think, geez, we could be on this train in a few years' time, and yeah, the GAA set for life almost.
The 5-year deal was a strange one, because, like, I mean, if this motion was to keep them in the bidding process, it was a right kick in the arse to people to give them the five, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
5 more years almost, and then for the GAA president to say the debate is over.
Unless that's just they stopped the debate for 5 years to say, look, there's nothing we can do about it now for another 5 years.
Yeah, he just didn't want any more talk about it, and I think that's been a little bit disrespectful to the amount of people that are up in arms about this, you know, to just tell them to go away and leave it alone, that the debate is over. I thought that was a little bit crass. Now, Tony Bass. Did you know who Tony Bass was before last week?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yeah.
You did. You knew he was the European delegate at Congress. Anyways, so Tony Bass made kind of headlines at Congress. I was in contact with Tony. I was going to get him on the show, but he was able to do last Thursday, but didn't get back to me in time today. But anyways, we'll talk about Tony briefly here, because he's spoken strongly against the CPA last year at Congress. And then this year, again, he's standing up speaking strongly against the CPA. And the reason I wanted to get him on the show is because I just wanted to ask him, why? Why would you be against an organisation? He thinks that the GAA is the CPA. He thinks that the GAA is the organisation for clubs, and that there's no need for the CPA. I disagree. If there was no need for the CPA, then there wouldn't have been
CPA.
There would be no CPA. Exactly. But he said something interesting, because he did a piece with John Fogarty in The Examiner on a follow-up, because he was accused of calling the CPA a nutty group, and he's denied that he said that. But he definitely spoke against them and has no interest in the CPA. But what he did say in the interview with John Fogarty, which I thought was very, very interesting, he thinks that the motion, this is the transparency motion that the CPA believed in and brought to Congress, he believed it would lead to witch hunts, right? So he elaborated on this, and he says, if everyone's individual vote was out there in the public domain, you would have a lot of older people involved too. It would be an invitation for all sorts of people to attack them, like the keyboard warriors and the Twitterati. So, like, I mean, here you go. If this person is following a mandate by the county board, there can be no witch hunts against this man. This man is just going up there with the word of the whole county, and he's just bringing their word up there. There could be no witch hunts. But wait, it gets a little bit clearer when he continues on. Normally, this is what he says in the same interview. Normally, you wouldn't break the mandate unless there was overwhelmingly good reason, like an angle that came up at Congress that you hadn't spotted or thought of. So here he is saying, absolutely, that Congress delegates break their mandate because something said at Congress that they think is interesting. It doesn't mean that the rest of the county board or the clubs think that's interesting. You personally think that's an interesting thing that you didn't think of. Mm. And you think you have the power then to change the mandate from your county board. And that's why these fellas don't want transparency. Isn't it unbelievable? I can't believe that was actually admitted. What everybody suspected, Tony Bass, in his criticism of the CPA, has admitted that the Congress delegates, well, that he anyways can go against the mandate. He says in Europe we go through a lot of motions and we know a lot of them wouldn't directly affect us, but we try to understand them. We rarely mandate our delegates, but when we do, we would check everyone's vote so we would have no trouble with anyone's accountability. So they, Europe anyways, they rarely mandate their delegates. So he's just got like the Europe Congress delegate just goes along and votes whatever way he thinks. Like, I mean, isn't that unbelievable? And you wonder, other county boards, are they mandating their delegates on every motion? Or is I think this is a power thing, because Tony Bass goes on in, because he criticised, or he talked about Anthony Miles, who had said, who the hell is Tony Bass? And no disrespect to Tony Bass, a lot of people would have been thinking the same thing, because Brendan Bugler was on the hurling show saying, whoever this Tony Bass fella is, right? So I hadn't heard of Tony either. But he listed out his credentials and his experience, and it was impressive with both club and with county, and for spanning a long kind of period of time. And you wonder, these Congress delegates, because they obviously have a long kind of service to the association, do they feel that they deserve that bit of power to be able to vote what way they want? Do they think it's on their shoulders that I'm the man going to Congress, you know, and if I feel there's something up here that changes my opinion on it, I'm going to change the way I vote? Do you know what I mean? Is this CPA motion taking the power of these Congress delegates that might think that they're kind of deserve this kind of responsibility to be able to vote whatever way they want on the association? And the way it read to me was almost like Tony Bass thinks he kind of has earned the right to vote whatever way he wants at Congress.
I mean, like, I'd say that probably happens naturally. I don't think they're being contrary when they're thinking, oh, I'm going to vote the way I want to vote. Maybe they just have their own opinion on something. Maybe they hear someone banging on about great gales and that just sort of sways them. Also, the worrying thing, I suppose, for the public is that Congress is over a weekend, so there's, you know, a night before and there's a night of one of the days, and it's like, you know, it's just opportunities to start swaying people then and start convincing people in certain ways. I don't know. Well, listen, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, and to be honest, I was just trying to keep you honest, giving you some shit counter arguments back. The only thing I would say is that the witch hunt probably could extend a bit further down. I was talking about the conversations that people have then at county level and a club level. If people are aware of what they're all voting for, then that county, it doesn't matter, it's the whole county. So it's again, county. It's a bad,
it's a mandate. There can be no witch hunts again. There could be a witch hunt against a man who goes against his whole county. Yeah. And rightly so, because you shouldn't be doing it. That's not democracy. Like, I mean, that's not following the procedures that the GA think is supposed to happen, but don't police them. That's deserved witch hunt if that's what you think you can go up to Congress and do.
Now, the only thing in defence of people like Tony Bass and that, Tony Bass, whatever.
it's Bass.
Like, they're in there, like, they've been appointed to that position. I know a lot of people appointed as well, wrongly, but they're in that position for a reason. They have those credentials, so are they within their rights? Maybe not within their rights, but if they do hear something, do they know a bit better than somebody else? Do they think that this could affect something?
See, okay, maybe that's fair enough, actually, because what is the point? This is another thing, and you
made a good point.
Yeah. No, you've made a good point there, because don't we know that the black card got through because Joe Brawley made a great speech at Congress or such and such? Why does Liam Griffin speak at the last Congress to sway voters? But if you're mandated by your county board, you should be voting one way or another anyway. So what's the point in these speeches at Congress? The reason people make these impassioned pleas at Congress is because the Tony Basses of this world will go against the mandate. Or maybe they were never given a mandate. So the Joe Brawleys and the Liam Griffins obviously know how this kind of thing thing works, or else they wouldn't be going up making these great presentations, because it would be too late by then. It's going around to the individual county boards before the Congress ever starts with these presentations. That's when they should be done.
Tony Bassett just opened the Pandora's box here. Like, what is the point of Congress?
What is the point of Congress?
If they just give us the motions and we'll vote.
Yeah.
There's no point of Congress. Well, the counties will get back to you on email.
Yeah. Yeah, counties, county boards will individually vote electronically and we'll all see which way they vote, and there's no need for all this stuff for Congress. Jeez, that is actually bizarre.
Well, we got to the bottom of that.
It's just like a little light switch goes off in your head. More on footballing kind of side of things here, Conan. Colm Collins is absolutely livid, and he's livid because Jamie Malone was suspended for that altercation with Shane Stapleton, and he appealed it and the appeal wasn't upheld. But I didn't hear this at the time because it was overshadowed by that, because obviously Shane Stapleton got badly injured and that's what all the talk about. But Gordon Kelly allegedly sprayed water at an umpire, which took us out of his water bottle, which I thought was an absolute classic, because I've done that once or twice on the football field.
Once or twice.
That somebody throws you in water, so I'll take a drink out of water and I'll just completely spray the fella that's marking me in the face with it. It paralyses them. They don't know what to do. Like, I mean, can you imagine how you would react to that? Like, it's one of the all time classics.
Yeah, are you allowed to be angry when someone does that to you?
You can't, but you don't know how to react. I actually did it in a Leinster final with Paul Casey, who, funnily enough, because he's involved with the Dublin ladies there, I went onto his Twitter, he was tagged, and he has me blocked. I never actually followed him or even knew he was on Twitter, but I remember marking him in a Leinster final, and I got water thrown in and I just drowned him with the water from about the stomach, you know, when you start low and spray up right up into his face, and he didn't do anything. He just stood there and he was completely rattled, but what can you do? But anyways, I just said I'd share that with you, because Gordon Kelly, the Clare player, did the same thing to an umpire. Now that's what the umpire is saying, and he's after getting 3 months for this. Now, a bit of water never hurt anyone. I know you have to have respect for the officials, but what Gordon Kelly is saying anyway is that he was cleaning the water out of the bottle and one of the umpires alleged hit him with the water. So this is Colm Collins saying all he did was clean out the water bottle before he drank it, like every player in the country does. The umpire says he hit him, which Gordon denies, and he got 3 months for it. Now, I don't know which kind of side to take on this. Considering my record with water bottles, I would think Gordon Kelly could have been spraying it. But I do know that a lot of lads, when they get a water bottle, I wouldn't do it. They often just spray a bit out to clean the top of it. I don't think it actually works, because what you actually want to be doing is cleaning around the outside of it, not the actual...
It's just what you do, you squirt out the...
You kind of squirt a bit. So I don't know. He's saying he did this and inadvertently hit the umpire. He'd want to be standing very close to the umpire kind of for that to work. But if he sprayed the umpire, still think 3 months is very, very steep when you talk Killian O'Connor elbowed a lad in the side of the head and he gets a match.
Yeah.
You spray a drop of water at an umpire.
Yeah.
That's even if he did it.
Why would he do it?
Oh, well, it was a pretty contentious game now. You know, there was a...
But the umpires are going after him.
You can get frustrated with umpires.
But that is a problem, I suppose, like if he did, like that's the rules interference of an official. 12 weeks, Dermot Connolly, Dublin fans might say like 12 weeks for pushing a linesman. I don't think it was harsh, but people will say that is. Elbowing somebody in the face is one match. So, like, that's the problem with the rules. Like, when this is, they're just being applied and they're badly done. Now, I wouldn't put it past. I got sent off before for giving a linesman the fingers. You know, it was actually minor final. We were last minute. We were 11 up or something like that, and I was just pushing my man, trying to be a narc, and the linesman was shouting and just telling me to stop it. Basically, I thought it was one of their players on the side with a water bottle and just gave him the fingers. All of a sudden, the linesman called the referee down, got sent off, and then I was up in front of the board then for 3 months because he said I kicked the guy, like, which
he said you kicked the umpire.
Said I kicked the player I was marking, but I didn't. But that was fabricated, like, you know, and well, that's my experience of it, and so I can see maybe how somebody would embellish these stories a little bit as well, like, you know, if you have a grievance with somebody. Or
so you're 11 points up in a match, you're blackguarding the fella you're marking, and then the umpire calls attention for you to stop blackguarding him, and you give the linesman the finger.
Yeah,
that's outrageous behaviour. Very disappointed with you for that. 11
that's
points
club
up.
Football up north.
Right, Chrissy McCaig talking about club football up north. Chrissy is being a bit of time for self reflection after losing to Nemo Rangers, and there was no shame in the way they lost to Nemo Rangers. It was a great game, but he's thinking that potentially that playing at such a high level at hurling emotionally and physically affected them for the Nemo game. I'm not sure what to think about this, because they had the same routine last year when they beat Vincent's, and they beat Vincent's in an absolute a really exciting game which came down to the wire in heavy conditions, and they showed no kind of signs of any emotional or physical kind of tiredness that day. So I don't know. I think often when you lose games, you blame the warm up, you blame all sorts of things. I would be disappointed if Slocknail have any notions about not continuing on their dual kind of participation, because like, they are a feel good success story within the GAA, and just because they lose a game after extra time to a great Nemo performance, you wouldn't like them to start having ideas like that.
Yeah, I'd say he's just tired. Like, you know, like last year, what they got to the semi final of the hurling and final of the football, and this year you get to the semi finals again. It's just non stop. He'll go back with Derry now as well and take a few beatings. And, like, you know, he's probably just emotionally drained. He used the word emotionally there, but yeah, like, I can't see him not going ahead. Like, was that stat last year? Was it 10 starters on the football team were also playing for the hurlers for Slocknail, and something like 18 in both squads or something like
There's a huge crossover. He says there comes a time when perhaps you might have to be selfish and say, physically, mentally, emotionally, I can't give much more here. I might have to pick a code or give slightly more to a code. So I don't know, like, they're pretty strong words. Now, again, this is coming off a loss and the huge disappointment of being so close for 3 years. Is it 3 or 4 years in a row? 3 years? Four years.
Won 3 Ulster finals, yes.
In 4 years. Yeah. Right, yeah. So that's it. So maybe it's just complete frustration, but you wouldn't really want them to go down that road.
Yeah, I'd say once the championship starts again in September, like, they'll be buzzing again, and they do seem to work it well. And when it's, you said, when it's going well, like, they always speak very highly of the two managers, hurling and football, and how they work it out. And yeah, like, I'd say he'll probably have a much different mindset in a few months' time, but then maybe he is just tired. Like, and that's a pity about football and hurling. Like, it's probably not feasible. Like, some of Derry's best players, for example, are all footballers, so they're never going to be hurlers.
The Derry manager actually said that he's going to give them as much time as he wants before he asks them back in, because obviously it's very draining. And again, this is the huge issue that a lot of managers have, and it's this crossover of all these competitions, Sigerson, club and league, that if you win a Sigerson Cup final or lose a Sigerson Cup final, if you win an All-Ireland semi-final or lose an All-Ireland semi-final, the manager won't have you for a while anyways, because you need closure to your season. You need a month off. You need to get over. You need to grieve for the loss. Like, I mean, it might sound extreme, but you do. So, like, it's not, all right, well, the All-Ireland semi-finals in football are over in the middle of February. The county manager will have them back then for March.
Yeah.
He won't, really. He might have them back for the last game. You know, so realistically, if you win a provincial club final, your county manager won't have you during the league. This is, again, this new structure, which is complete and utter
brave and bold
garbage that we actually didn't even met. Like, I thought, well, it goes without saying that the Sigerson and the club, we had a situation on one weekend where we had three competitions involving three, involving players involved in all three playing on the same weekend.
It'll be interesting, but you know yourself, at the end of every season, you just want to piss off, get away from everyone, you're fed up with them, and it's double the pain, obviously, because he's got two football and hurling.
That's the thing. And, like, I mean, I always remember with Laois, and I would have, I know it sounds rich when I joined Parnell's, but when I was playing with Port Laois, I would have been a really, really big Port Laois kind of man, and we were a really strong team, and you'd look forward to getting back with them. But when Laois finished, and this wasn't us winning anything with Laois in a lot of years, this was us just going out in the qualifiers, Port Laois wouldn't see me back properly for about 3 weeks after.
Yeah.
You know, at least 2 weeks to get over that kind of, even just have the following Friday night that you don't have to worry about football and go out drinking, and, you know, go out the Saturday and then take the next week off, and then you're back in the following week or whatever, and then to have your 100% kind of focus, where
closure, you say as well, like, that's right.
Yeah.
And that is a different way of looking at it. Like, yeah, because most club people, 90-odd% of them, finish in October and then they're all fed up. They get the break, and then in January they're the most enthusiastic people in the world again. But coming from a county team, or coming from a team who's lost a club All-Ireland semi-final, you have to go straight back into something else, and you just couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, no, it's true. Right, other news is Joe Kernan has retired. Now, when I saw this, I was thinking, Jesus, Joe Kernan, is he the first ever manager to announce his retirement? Is this going to be a new thing? Like, I mean, Joe Kernan is of the age where if we just don't see Joe Kernan around for a few years, we'll kind of understand Joe's not really managing anyone anymore. But it was an interview in the Irish News, and he was asked, obviously was asked, is he thinking about doing it again? He says no. It tires you out. You know, and he said the adrenaline isn't there now to go back and manage on a full time basis. The players would catch you out in 2 or 3 months because they'd know that you're not driven or driven. It was good while it lasted. So, like, I mean, he didn't announce his retirement. He was asked, would he manage again? And then the headline, Joe Kernan finished retiring. Don't have a problem with that either. If in fairness, we're coming off a quiet 4 or 5 days. If you want to go make a big thing out of Joe Kernan retiring when he didn't really retire, he just answered a question.
We're talking about it.
That's your own business. The reason we're talking about it is because to give Joe Kernan a shout out, because what a fantastic manager. It's actually an interesting thing when I was reading about Joe. Nobody remembers him managing Galway in 2009 for a year. Doing nothing with them and then resigning at the start of 2010. It was almost like the forgotten kind of year. It was like Galway were going through a really bad spell, but I remember when he took over, I think he played Joe Bergen full forward, you know, he did, you know, and he'd be in beside a small man like the Ronan Clark and Stephen McDonald thing, and you're thinking maybe Galway will do something. They didn't do anything. So I suppose since he left Armagh, managing Armagh, he managed the Ulster Railway Cup in 2008, then managed Galway 2009, then he went back managing Crossmaglen in 2013, and then he was over the compromise rules in 2000 and, or was it last year?
Yeah, last year.
I'm not too sure, last year, yeah. So, like, I mean, you couldn't imagine Joe Kernan going back managing now, but he had a great career. Like, I mean, I saw Tony McEntee was quoted saying that if Joe had been over Armagh in 2000 and 2001, they would have won. They could easily have won All Ireland because Galway beat them in 2001 by a point. Galway went on to win the All Ireland, and Kerry beat them after extra time.
Yeah,
in a replay, or was that maybe after extra time in 2000? So they were so close those 2 years. And Tony thinks that those little things that Joe Kernan did and his attention to detail back then, kind of might have got them over the line. And you'd see Armagh, and I honestly, with that Armagh team, it eats them up that they didn't win 2 All-Irelands.
Yeah, it's crazy when you look at it. They think that they didn't, and. Yeah, was it 3 years in a row that they lost to the eventual champions or something like that? And I think the Kerry one was a replay and then extra time or something. That's how close they were to beating them. But like, I remember reading Oisín McConville's book, and he spoke very highly of Joe Kernan. Like, anybody you talk to from Armagh speaks highly of him. And the whole thing was, in the first meeting, was like, this, you know, this bus is stopping at Sam Maguire, and if you don't want on it now, get off.
Yeah,
somebody in Leash might have stood up there and walked out when he said that.
The big one that he gets huge credit for was the speech at half time in the Kerry game.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes down in folklore of him pulling out his loser's medal. I didn't realise he got loser's medal. Maybe you do. I've never lost an All-Ireland final. I've lost two, a club one and an under 20. Yeah, but maybe a senior. I don't remember having any loser's All-Ireland medals. Not that you'd really keep them anyways, but didn't he slam down his loser's medal
into
there?
The shower or something like that?
Yeah, onto the table, and says, don't be like me, whatever. And they obviously went, after Kerry being great in the first half, they obviously went out in the second half. And like, sometimes we talk about how little effect speeches have when you go back out into the field anyways. What can it do? But like, they do have some effect. Some players get stuff from them, and they can make you try that little bit harder. If you're a little bit clinical and cynical like me, you'll think what he says should not affect what I want. Do you know what I mean? But some players get a blast off those manager speeches.
Yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see that. Like, those sort of visual effects and sound effects as well, slamming a medal across and the symbolism of it. Like, I could definitely see that. I always remember leaving the Kuzik stand that day, 2002, like, what, 5 minutes after the game, and some Armagh lad coming up and saying, did you hear what Paddy O'Shea said to Kerry at halftime? Said, you might as well go home now, we've won the game. I said, where did you hear this? Like, how have you heard it already? And that was the story in Armagh going around then. The Paddy O'Shea told him the game was won. But
those, now that on halftime speeches, it, when you perform well in the first half, maybe you go in 4 or 5 points up. Like, I mean, that speech at halftime, does nothing for you if that's what's going to get you going, because the message is, keep doing what you're doing, lads. You're doing well. Like, I mean, that completely puts you in the wrong frame of mind for going back out. This, keep doing what you're doing. Oh, I don't know. You need to think up a better angle than that. You need to find someone that's not playing well. You need to hop off them in some way, because, like, okay, lads, we'll go out in the second half now, and it's a draw match now, lads. We're starting from scratch now, but keep doing what you're doing. Oh, I don't know about that. I've heard so many of those stupid speeches that sometimes you can go out thinking, God, we're going great here. I don't know.
I remember a good, like, championship semi-final, and we were well up. We were beating the team well, like, doing everything that was asked of us. And the manager came in and he almost had tears in his eyes because he was telling us we were holding back on him and there was so much more on us and we were holding back and the club's on its knees and why won't we just pick it off his knee for once? And we were bouncing.
I'd like something like that, but yeah. You can only pull that out once.
Exactly. He didn't last in after the final that we lost.
He used it up for the semi-final, didn't he? Yeah. Schoolboy error.
Yeah.
After you have to keep one, and that's a big risk then as well, because say if you have this brilliant speech that you want to pull out and you want to go shouting and roaring because you can't get the whack off that all the time. But like, I mean, you're a few points down in the semi-final at halftime. Do you use it up or do you take
you might never get to use it if you don't
use it.
Yeah,
a sticker twist with your speech. You don't really know what to do. But one of the best stories of Joe Kernan's was one that I was reading. I can't believe I hadn't heard this one. And it was him before the All-Ireland semi-final against Dublin in 2002. So Joe rang around to a few players. They were going down for a kick around in Dublin, but Joe rang around for four players to come down with him in the car. So they went to two pubs and they had two pints. So just one pint in each pub. So the two pints, so it was no big deal. Like, I mean, it's not going to have any effect on you. Joe was wearing a big pink shirt, like really showing himself off. And the whole story was, they obviously hit two real GEA pubs in Dublin because the story was Armagh were on the beer down in Dublin. It's a classic. How have I never thought of that? Like, it really is. That's taking attention to detail to a whole new level, is to go down and have two pints and let that rumour go around.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
And that'll be talked about in the opposition dressing room then during training and stuff.
Yeah,
and
he was wearing a fluorescent shirt. I think this is Benny Tierney, the goalkeeper. Is it Benny?
Yeah.
Tierney, yeah. He was telling this story. And I say Benny would have been one of the lads he brought down. He would have brought down a few lads that was believable that they were on the beer.
That's a cracker.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. Last but by no means least, is this my last talking point? It is my last talking point. And this is Peter Boyle. So Peter Boyle once called me a washed up ball bag because I criticised his technique for saving a penalty. But Peter Boyle has now withdrawn from the Donegal panel, which also makes Peter Boyle washed up. And we know he's a ball bag for sending me that tweet. So he's also a washed up ball bag. Isn't this ironic now that Peter Boyle has become what he called me? Incredible stuff.
I must dig out a podcast where you were talking about getting people back and waiting the long grass and waiting for revenge, and you will always get them back.
Oh, I tell you, it's a flaw in my character that I will, the long grass, I will wait. I'll wait years to get back. And Peter Boyle only gave me seven or eight months. That's all I had to wait
for. Go ahead, serve him up.
So Peter Boyle has withdrawn from the panel. I can kind of see why he did. Now, it's a little bit weird as well. He says, I could have sat on the bench and got an Ulster medal, but for me, that wouldn't have counted as anything, he said in an interview with the Irish News. Now, Peter Boyle, that's fair enough, but you've sat on the bench for most of your career, Peter, let's be honest. So, like, I mean, you would have been well used to being the number two. He's played 17 times since 2010 when he made his debut in 2011. He's played 17 times. So that's actually 7 years. So you're only averaging maybe two appearances a year. So like, you shouldn't really be that put out. Now, in Peter's defence is Mark Anthony McGinley got injured against I think it was Kerry, and he came in and he played the next two games. Now, he did fine in the next two games, so maybe Peter in his head's thinking, right, I'm back in, I've served my time, this is my opportunity to get back in. And as it turns out, Sean St. Junan's Sean Patton is another goalkeeper to have on the squad. So he played the McKenna Cup game last weekend, and they're coming back then to play the Kildare game. And I'm sure Peter Boyle thought, right, well, they gave him that cup game, you know, like Premier League teams do. Play the cup, just give him a run because he's new. I'll be back in the league. I've performed all right in the two league games. I've been number two for long enough, and now I'll be back in for Kildare, which is the important game, home game. And he's not on it, so it's Sean Patton's on it. So I can see where he's coming from by going, Jesus, if I'm number two to Mark Anthony McGinley for that long, I'm not going to be number two to this new lad who's on the panel, this Sean Patton who's been playing League of Ireland or I think something like that. So I can see where Peter's coming from. I've dropped off squads, it's too much of a commitment. In my defence, I was generally on the team if I was fit and my attitude was right, so I couldn't handle being a sub. Peter maybe can't handle being a sub after having that kind of idea that he wasn't going to be a sub anymore, maybe.
Yeah, but maybe he did his time, like, and then thought, you know, they did everything he had to do, you know, he was in the team. But I think when something like that happens, when you do get your chance because somebody gets injured, then all of a sudden they bring in a third keeper, or like I've seen it before in other panels where a pile of halfbacks are injured, and then instead of using the sub halfback, they call in somebody else from club football around the county and bring him in, and then it becomes clear that you're not in the manager's plans. Like, so this is annoying to Peter Boyle. It's just like, why am I here if the main keeper's injured? I've been here doing my time, been playing, and now they're just not interested.
Yeah,
so.
But here's another thing, and I'll be totally on Peter's side in this, because he did an interview with the Donegal Democrat. I'm pretty sure it was the Donegal Democrat that I was reading, and like, I mean, it's just communication. Like, just managers, just talk to your players. Like, I mean, we talk more on the hurling show about this because Jerk Cunningham, we discussed Jerk Cunningham a lot, and Conor Keeney was telling us that a lot of the older players that Cunningham might have dropped or set aside, it wasn't that their egos were out of control or their noses were out of joint for being a sub. It's that you have all that experience and you're training hard and you're a sub and nothing's said to you. You know what I mean? You're not even given an explanation or communicated with in any way. Yeah. But Peter was explaining his decision, and he's obviously going back to play with his club now. But he was saying, I knew the Kildare game was a massive game for us, our biggest one of the year. On the Tuesday night before that match, there was an A versus B game, and I noticed I was on the B team. Nothing was said to me, and an A versus B game was on Thursday, and I was on the B team again. The Donegal team was named on the Saturday and I wasn't on. I was disappointed, not only the fact it was in Ballyshannon, people might say he didn't get a game on his home turf and he was sour about that. Anyways, so he's played two games, then he lands the training and there's an A versus B and he's on the B team and nothing said to him.
Yeah.
Like, I can't comprehend that. Then Thursday again, A versus B's, B again. Second opportunity for the management to say, Peter, I know you played the last two games, but, you know, what's the new lad's name? Jeez, I'll get
Patton.
Sean Patton. Sean played really well in the McKenna Cup game, and we're going to give him the next game, but you'll play the last two, and we'll make a decision then between, you know who, because it's the two of you are 50-50 at the moment. I would say Peter Boyle would still be on the squad if he even had that conversation.
Yeah.
But he was just ignored, wasn't said anything to anybody. So he's played two games, then has been sub goalkeeper for so long, then gets back in, plays two games, then the other fella's given a game, then he's landing to training on the Tuesday night and he's on the B team without any explanation, without any talk. And like, this is a message to any managers, that conversation's not hard. It's not hard to say to Peter Boyle, Peter, just to give you a heads up, we're putting you in the B team tonight. Sean did very well in the McKenna Cup game and it's actually a 50-50 between the two of you now, and I promise you, you'll get the last two league games. We're going to give him this Kildare game and the next one, and then we'll make a decision on who's, you know, going to, whoever's in the best form will get on the championship. You're falling down maybe because of this, you need to improving this.
Yeah.
Sean's good at this, he's good at that. Like, Peter Boyle would say, Declan, thanks very much, I appreciate it. At least I know where I stand now. And that's all players ever want, to know where they stand.
Yeah, and even if it wasn't 50-50, as you say, just go and tell him why Patton's ahead of you right now. Like, you know, here's why he's in the team and you're not, and here's what you should work on. And yeah, he might still be in the panel because of that. Might not. It was even more than two games, because that Kerry game, he came on very early as well. And like, we were all raving about Donegal, you know, the first three games as well. So he's probably thinking, what the hell have I done wrong here? Especially just not to have that communication.
Yeah, no, it's true. And like, I mean, I remember one time with Portlaoise, remember when I went out publicly giving out about those managers and obviously got in a lot of trouble with the club. We won the county final and I played really well the whole way through it, and I had a feeling I was on thin ice with the two of them, because we played a challenge game and I wasn't picked for the challenge game. Again, no communication, nothing said to me. And I was thinking, all right, maybe they're giving lads a run or whatever. And then we were playing the first round of the Leinster Club, and I'm walking up the stairs to a meeting on the Friday night, and one of the other players is being told on the stage, that on the stairs on the way up, that he's not starting, and being explained the reasons he's not starting.
Yeah.
So I get up to the meeting anyways and go, ah, lovely, well, I'm starting now, because I obviously would have been given the heads up if they're given around heads ups. So me and the other fella had been dropped from the county final team that was given the explanation, and not a dicky bird said to me. Do you know what I mean? So then you wonder, why the hell would players not lose their minds with stuff like that? It's not right, you know. You have to know where you stand. And I ended up coming on in that game when they needed me, you see. You know what I mean? It's easy to drop somebody who's been playing well, but then when it was you know, I was going to make a comparison to another player in another match, but I just absolutely won't. I'll be absolutely lynched.
And Jim McConnelly had to come on at half time.
That's what popped into my head. I went, do not go down there for a Leinster club quarter final. Jesus, because the way people twist these things. Remember, I compared myself to Connolly before, only in. What was I saying?
Was,
we were the same kind
behavior?
Of behavior. Yeah. Neither of us were angels.
Yeah.
And of course, Woolley's comparing himself to. Give me a break.
I get a good headline out of that later on.
But that's it, yeah. But come here, that's all we have time for. So, Peter Boyle, you're now washed up. You're also a ball bag. I'm also a washed up ball bag. Maybe we should go for a pint or something like that. Yeah, that's all we've time for. So, we've done well just out of a bit of news, Colin. And this is the Hurling and Football Show. We're back to normal, obviously, on Thursday with two shows, and we will be flat out for the next 4 weeks until the league finals, which are going to be on the same day. It looks like now they're definitely going to be on the same weekend. I think it's the 31st of March or maybe the 1st of April, one of the two.
Both
of those, so the hurling and football on the same days, and maybe the division. Maybe the Division 4 final will be on the 6th or 7th of April, or else Antrim are going to have to come down to Portlaoise midweek, tired, pissed off, and we'll beat them out the gate and we'll get out of Division 4. So maybe it's not too bad from a Leash point of view. Right, we'll talk to you on Thursday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.